Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 24. What you see is what you get. And the War Games Atlantic. Ivan was online. Then he disappeared. Never came into the stream. My wife's angry. And my computer crashed right before this. So this may be a cursed stream. Is it because I'm wearing this gray rabbit or cat suit? I think so. Gray cats are bad luck. What can you do? So, yeah, I don't really know. What to say? Just you gotta watch out, I guess. When you're talking about current scandals, War Games Atlantic used to be, well, okay, they didn't used to be, but the owner, if you haven't heard, is pretty interesting. The owner, or like the runner of War Games Atlantic, used to be the guy who ran War Games Factory, which kind of makes sense if you think about it, because a lot of those War Games Atlantic kits kind of look like reissues of the War Games Factory kits. You know, it's kind of updated, or in the case of the skeletons, embigified. And apparently he ran afoul of the Chinese manufacturing process during their Kickstarter, and the Chinese manufacturer stole all their IP and resold it himself and cut them off, and then they couldn't fulfill their Kickstarter, and then everyone was angry, and he lost a lot of money, and he was sad, and everyone hated him, as we do whenever a Kickstarter goes afoul. So he did something amazing. He changed his name to something else. And I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. And he started War Games Atlantic with the help of a friend, a Canadian friend. Everyone needs a Canadian friend. So that's pretty cool. And he had to disguise his name. Yeah. So that people, like his bad rep, didn't follow him. And then he was able to become really successful. And now he's going to pay back everyone who kickstarted but never got fulfilled. So that's pretty cool. Pretty darn phenomenal, that kind of news. And I was going to talk about WYSIWYG. What is WYSIWYG, you say? I don't understand. WYSIWYS. What you see is what you get. So if you look at this, oh, that's right, my focus isn't there. This little miniature, if you can see, has a sword. And a little stone. So that means they should represent someone who is wielding a sword and can do stony things. Maybe throw a stone, or in this case, it's like a little rune stone so you can cast a spell. You know, they clearly look like a wizard. They have a little book on their back. So you should say, you know, if you look at this miniature on the tabletop, you should say, that is a wizard with a sword. And that's how they should exactly perform. They should perform like a wizard with a sword. So they shouldn't act like a lady with a crossbow, like this one, and vice versa. A lady with a crossbow shouldn't act like a wizard with a sword. And sometimes it gets tricky when you're doing things like playing a game of Mordheim, and you're looking out at the opponent's units, and they did some really cool creative stuff, like maybe they're using Gashapon or something, but you have no idea what they have, or what they're doing, or what they are, and it gets kind of tricky. And so you can ask your opponent, you know, what's this, what's this, what's this? But it kind of slows the game down, so you just kind of toss your minis at it and hope for the best, which actually is my play strategy for everything the units are. Last night in Mordheim, I played against a three-way. So one was a Cult of the Possessed, and the other was, I don't know, some dudes with rapiers, where they were a 1B list, not a 1A list, which means they weren't official Mordheim lists. They were like the unofficial Mordheim lists. And the guy playing the Cult of the Possessed had his miniatures done up very nicely, and everything was exactly what you'd think when you saw it. And same with the guy with the rapier dudes. Crossbow guys had crossbows, duelists had two swords, things like that. But I didn't know how deadly a chaos spawn was, and that's my fault. I should have chaos spawns, but I didn't. So I got worked over by that chaos spawn. I was playing undead, and I had ghouls that looked like ghouls. And they were ghouls, and they were hungry. But they could not, for the life of them, touch that chaos spawn. It was phenomenal. And yeah, so it was a three-way. I routed. The guy with the Cult of the Possessed routed. And Rapier Man won the day. Mostly had some amazing armor saves. I've never seen so many successful armor saves in Mordheim. He was typically either a 5+ or a 6+, I think, with his dudes. And he just was rolling hot on those. So I was not able to overwhelm him. But yeah, it was nice because he had WYSIWYG. So I knew what he had, he knew what I had, and made the game a lot smoother, I feel. WYSIWYG is great. coming clean and fulfilling your Kickstarter is also great. Good onward Games Atlantic. And they do great kits. Great kits that you could easily WYSIWYG. So if you've got halflings with pole arms in a game, you can easily do it with War Games Atlantic. Make it look like a halfling with a pole arm. If you have a halfling armed some other way, maybe bows is good, slings are good. But I think they got like a short sword on that kit. I think that's about it though. Maybe a spear. So if you want like a halfling with like a crossbow, you gotta kit bash. And you should kit bash for WYSIWYG. It's great. So that's it. Yeah. That's all I really have to say on my own. I was hoping to have some banter. I was going to talk to Ivan about his gaming, the games that he writes, if he prefers WYSIWYG or not, if he feels too important. Games like 5 Parsecs from Home, harder to WYSIWYG. I mean, you can, but you'd have to be pretty dedicated. And, oh yeah, like Necromunda. Necromunda was another game people could WYSIWYG, but you have to rip the arms off your dudes whenever they get equipment changes. That's the big one, equipment changes. It's tough. Tough to WYSIWYG. You'll have to do that more time too, really. Actually, I'm a liar. I have a Dreg who has a dagger, and that's who he's armed with. But he's also armed with a bow, and his miniature doesn't have a bow. That's not a WYSIWYG. But I also don't really want to modify that miniature because it's for Underworlds. So what I want to do is build another Dreg who will have a bow. So everyone knows that's a Dreg with a bow. It's important now because my Dreg guy, he got a hand injury. So he lost a weapon skill. So now he's got to shoot. So he needs to look like a shooter. So I best build one of those. And that, yeah, no one's in chat. I got no co-host. And I'm kind of sweaty in this cat suit. I'm a sweaty dude. So I'm going to sign off. Hope you all have a good night. Take care. Bye.
Hey! We are live and ready to go.
Look, it's a wild Ivan.
It is. This time, everything didn't go completely wrong, so I am totally here.
Hooray! So we are returning to episode 24. We had episode 25, yeah. And now we're back for more talk on WYSIWYG.
Yes. That makes it kind of mysterious.
Yeah.
Maybe a little
War Games, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe a little War Games drama and some paranoia.
Yeah.
Probably. Yes.
That's the big one. Yeah, what is going on with paranoia? I haven't been on the internet much, so I actually don't know too many details. I just know it's about a IP I know nothing about and have probably heard of at least one point in time.
Yeah, everyone's heard of paranoia. It's one of those like RPGs that like I think more people tell stories about than the number of people who ever played it. So it's kind of interesting. It was kind of a weird project. But I think we'll start with a bit of just kind of modeling, painting, gaming philosophy. We like to philosophize.
Yeah.
So WYSIWYG, which is not just about like how computer text appears on your printer. It is also what you see is what you get. Well, it means that for computers too. But it is that your models are like completely accurate. Well, I guess that's the first question. How much what you see is what you get should it be to be WYSIWYG? Like if I have the right space marine, but he has the wrong like pistol or sword. Is that like?
Well, I think it highly depends on the environment that you are gaming in. Because if you are doing a miniatures agnostic game, then chances are you cannot WYSIWYG.
Or like whatever you say it is actually what it is.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Like this guy is the guy I'm saying is, you know, a storm shock assault trooper. Because, you know, it doesn't say in the rule book what mini to use. So now it officially is the real one, right?
That's right. Yeah.
But like when we played like Warhammer back in the day, we kind of had the, not at tournaments, because there it was like 100%, you know, to be correct. But when we were just playing, like if you wanted to take a guy with a missile launcher and say that was a last cannon, that was just kind of okay. Like as long as it was like a guy with a heavy weapon, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your plasma guns could be melted guns or whatever. Like if you did it too much, people would kind of get sick of it because it gets like confusing. But that was always kind of okay to do. But that's not really what people think when they say WYSIWYG, or is it? Like, I feel like when people say it, it's like very specific. Like,
yeah. It is, but it's also not. because that's like in a friendly context. So, and they represent a heavy weapon. So I think there's degrees of WYSIWYG that people kind of look for all the way up to like the tightest point. So if you're playing in a 40K tournament, everything is laid out exactly how it should be. It should be a Space Marine with a last gun. And if he doesn't look like a Space Marine with a last gun, then you're not WYSIWYGing, basically.
Right. But like that's so the tournament level is like the as exact as possible. I remember there were some games, I think this may even have been in the rule book sometimes, where they sort of encourage you when you bought like upgrades, like your dude has like a scanner or something. They definitely like encourage you to put that on the models, but like nobody did that part, even at tournament.
Yeah.
People didn't do any of that, but like the weapons would be accurate. So that's like the top level, like level 10, I guess. Then like below that, you have kind of the more relaxed, like you say, like a heavy weapon is a heavy weapon. Like, but it still has to be like, you know, you can't show up with like some Eldar and say they're Dark Eldar or whatever. Like your guardians can't be whatever they're called, Dark Eldar. Spike Mantises or whatever the fuck. like you can't bring your Space Wolves and say they're Dark Angels. Like that's like still a step too far for a lot.
Yeah.
Even if you're okay saying like, okay, today this guy has like a power fist instead of a sword.
You know? Yeah, as long as he's got the hand weapon of some sort, then it can pass. It's all right.
Yeah.
But which you can like have like a squad of bolter guys and be like, one of these guys has a last gun, and you get to guess which one.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, because then it gets kind of like, oh, it just happened to be the one guy who's in line of sight. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Weird how it always works out that way.
Yeah, yeah. But that's kind of part of it, right? It's like being able to visually identify like what the units still are. If I see a Devastator squad of Space Marines and they have four heavy weapons, like even if the weapons are not accurate, but I can still sort of gauge like, okay, those dudes are like bad news and I should probably like do something with them. Then like the level below that, you have the where it gets very fudgy, like they might be Space Marine models, but they could be kind of anything. Like, I got five leftover Space Marines, so I'm going to, like, those are going to be my Terminator squad kind of thing.
Yep.
Where, and then it kind of unravels, like, pretty quickly. Like, very quickly, you're at, like, the Coke can, like, Orc Dreadnought and stuffed animals for Chaos Demons and stuff.
That's amazing. Oh,
I like that. Yeah, we had one guy who it was technically a model, although I don't think it was ever tournament tested, but it was a Orc Dreadnought built out of a toilet paper roll
with legs
and guns glued to it. So it was a real model, but it kind of looked like halfway there. I remember the big argument we had because in I think second edition 40K, orcs could use captured like Imperial vehicles. If you had like a squad of blood axes or whatever they were. But it said in the Orc Codex that they had to look like orc vehicles. You couldn't just use. And this one guy, my friend Peter's little brother, insisted that because blood axes use camouflage, the only orcs that use camo, and the tank was already painted in Imperial camouflage, therefore it was technically already looking like an orc tank. Which we didn't let him get away with because it was a Leavenworth demolisher and we didn't want him to have that thing. Because it was one of those things where he was basically like borrowing the tank from his older brother's Imperial Guard army, and his brother didn't want him to like stick orc shit all over that tank.
Yeah.
So but you know, because that's kind of like the range of it, where because on one hand it's like the that's always the argument of like, what is like a model like represent? Is it like a personification of your art and craft and skill and time and investment into your army that is representing blah 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 blah, or is it like a game piece and you could just use like a piece of cardboard with Space Marine written on it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what is the lousiest looking game you played?
The lousiest?
Yeah, just like the absolute worst looking, like cardboard pieces or just not even spray painted sprue.
I was telling Tom I did use a movement tray as a Razorback once, because I didn't have a Razorback. So it's like I just wrote Razorback on it. It's like, there we go. It's like the same, you know, surface area.
It's so close.
So, yeah. And I did use Dark Eldar as Necrons once.
All right.
But it was a friendly game.
Yeah, because
Necrons weren't even out yet. They're like rare metal models that were just released in White Dwarf.
Oh,
I want to try those rules. So we just used the Dark Eldar that we
Yeah, I mean, that's works too. Yeah, we definitely had some lousy stuff. I remember we played some Warhammer Fantasy Battle games where we just cut out like squares of paper to be the regiments, and you'd just write Skaven Warriors on them with a number of how many there were, and then you just like mark them off when they died. Like we did a lot of stuff like that. I remember I had like epic Space Marine armies, 40k armies that were all cut out of on cardboard, and they were just like the size of the actual bases, and you'd write like the squad types on them.
Yeah.
But that was before we could get our hands on the game. But we always had kind of a very, I think it was partly because we did play tournaments a lot. So when you did that, like everything had to be like, you know, exact and precise. So when we weren't playing tournament play, it was kind of like everyone wanted to try out like some random things. Yeah.
It's not that far off from like chit gaming anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, when you're playing like a hex game, like it's just a piece of cardboard. It might have a little drawing on it, but a lot of times it just has like a NATO symbol.
Yeah, I think it's acceptable if that's what everyone wants to do. It's just, yeah, if you're looking for a spectacle, that's where everything kind of falls apart. And where WYSIWYG is a little stronger.
Because... Yeah, like there's a spectacle part, and then there's like the clarity part. Because when you're playing like a board game, like you can still look at the counters and see what they are. Like you can see that's the 3rd Infantry Division or whatever. When you're using like your Eldar's Necrons, it's a little less clear like what everything is like at a glance, especially if it changes like between games, you know?
Yep.
Like it's one thing if it's like an emergency. Like I remember using some like 172 plastic like Germans as rattling snipers because I absolutely could not find where my rattling minis had gone. They were like lost on the shelf somewhere. Like, I guess they were infiltrating. So the only thing I had on hand was like, okay, well, these guys are kind of short compared to guardsmen. So for this game, and that was fine because it was just one game. But if like next game, those same minis were there again, but now they're like a command squad or something, you know, then it starts like taking the piss a little bit. But it's also like, I feel sometimes when you see this discussion online, because some people are like very like adamant, like, it doesn't matter as long as it's a model. Some people are more specific. Like some of it becomes like a affordability question too, right? You know, but maybe the answer is just like, don't play like the expensive game that requires a $500 army.
Yeah. Or just play with what you got, you know, what are those? Yeah. Those are the two options, I guess.
Play small battles. Yeah. I mean, you gotta like go, you know, that's kind of the flip side to it as well, especially for like Warhammer. Cause like you can find like 12 different places you can buy like definitely not Space Marine models of various legalities. So, and you know, if you're playing Imperial Guard, you have it kind of easy because you can just literally grab some human troopers. There's a lot of companies that make, including War Games Atlantic. Look at the foreshadowing there. So let's say you wanted to have some War Games Atlantic figures and you wanted to like pretend that they were actually a completely different company's figures for nefarious reasons. Like, does that like, do people outside of like store employees, do people actually give a shit if you are showing up with like the official minis or not?
Someone's like, if you definitely someone's got
Yeah, but is that a guy who actually gives a shit, or is that a dude who realizes that if he complains about it, you can't use your like hero or whatever?
Yeah, maybe he's angry because he spent all that money on GW stuff, and
you just got your
quarter priced War Games Atlantic,
or 3D printed like Ukrainian minis or whatever. Because I feel like even though technically that's not what you see is what you get, because it's not a real Space Marine. But if it's obviously looks like a Space Marine and it looks like it has the right weapon or like pretty close to it anyway. Yeah, like I remember my old guard army had a bunch of like void and war minis in it. And nobody gave a shit about Warzone minis as well. Nobody gave a shit about those because it looked close enough. Like a dude with a missile launcher is a dude with a missile launcher.
Yeah.
So even though like some of them were like void guys or whatever, because nobody actually played void. You know, they could get used there and it was fine. Nobody cared about that, but maybe somebody would.
Somebody would for sure. Because I think they want the very specific spectacle. They wanted to see your Warhammer army against their Warhammer army. And here you are with your third party miniatures.
Yeah,
you're not even real miniatures.
knockoff troopers.
Which I'm pretty sure I've heard that someone say that before. They're not real miniatures because only Games Workshop miniatures are real. I don't know.
Oh, I have run into once or twice people who opine pretty negatively on bringing converted models to a tournament.
Yeah.
So, although in that case, that was back in the day where, like, the judges would, like, go through and, like, rate your armies, which included, like, any conversions and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they always had, like, a painter from Games Workshop coming over. So it's as close to being, like the guy who paints for a Golden Demon said it was fine. He liked my dude's arm, so fuck off.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, it was basically this idea that, like, you're supposed to use the models, like, as is. Otherwise, it's some sort of weird, you know.
Weird, what's it called? Heresy? Affront to the Emperor.
Yeah,
that's God?
What, yeah. Yeah, that's like what all the kids are calling it now. With their memes. So, but that's the other part. Because you can grab some minis that have nothing to do with the game. You can grab some, like, knockoffs from, like, the 3D print dudes that have shut down their shops every 2 weeks. But you can also just grab some, like, straight up recasts, especially if you're playing, like, Oldhammer.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
I don't know how many, like, of that one Eldar Exarch with the Dark Reaper helmet they actually made back in the day. But, like, when I was looking for one, there was a guy selling, like, 12 of them, and they're all pristine on eBay. They're all very shiny.
Lucked out so well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were really shiny. No lead rod or anything. In fact, they didn't look like lead, which is very funny for a second edition Eldar mini. But, you know, I'm sure there's nothing to that. Since he was selling them for, like, $4 a pop. Which is also definitely the price that, like, out-of-print Eldar minis go for. So
it's true. Yeah, yeah. They're worthless, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People give them away. Like, some people will pay you to get the shit out of their hands so their wife will stop nagging. So where do you stand on... this is where we get people to, like, confess to things that'll ruin their careers later in the gaming industry. Right. Where do you stand on recasts? Have you ever knowingly purchased a recast?
Yes. I wanted to see it. Back when all of a sudden the Chinese recasters appeared out of nowhere. And it was like, wow, it's so amazing quality.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I want to check it out. So I bought some. I never actually built any. I just looked at
the bits. I'm like, okay. Was it actually amazing quality?
Yeah.
It was. Because I've gotten some. I have not intentionally bought some, but I have bought some where, like, I didn't buy that Elder, but there were some, I think it was some Space Marine Scouts, the old Metal Scouts. Mm-hmm. I was like, these look a little weird. But I bought them anyway, and then I couldn't tell, but I have a feeling because they're very brittle. And I don't think they had switched to, and they were, like, brittle even comparing to, like, white old school, like, white metal figures, which were kind of brittle to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But the features were all, like, really sharp and crisp. They didn't really, so it was hard to tell if they were fake or not. But I wouldn't have, like, yeah, it doesn't, I will say it bothers me if it is stuff that is currently being made, because then it's a little bit of a different argument. Like, I know Games Workshop doesn't need more money, but, like, people will, like, I've bought minis that were, like, ripped off from, like, Ground Zero Games that I didn't know about, and those I actually, like, felt kind of bad about, because, like, I've talked to John from GCG. He's, like, a cool dude. Like, I wouldn't have bought those if, you know, actually, that was on the Weasel Court, because it was these, like, plastic, some Russian guy who had, like, hobbied, it's, like, one of the old GCG ranges, and put, like, a bunch of, like, shit on them, like, larger shoulder pads. And I remember, like, seeing them because they were super cheap. I remember seeing them. I was like, they look sort of familiar, but I couldn't recognize them. And I thought, because you often see those, like, Russian or used to Russian, like, toy lines and stuff. So I bought a big bag of them and I was showing them off. And then somebody was like, you know, those are, like, ripped off, like, GCG minis. Like, and I looked it up. It's like, fuck, they are. Like,
but they added shoulder pads. So, you know.
Yeah. Like, technically, I don't know if that would count. It might count in Russia. You know, like, if you modify something enough, does that make it, like, a new model?
That makes it legally distinct.
Yeah. But that, like, I did feel bad about, because, you know, like, I know it doesn't technically make a difference, but, like, there's a difference between a company that's, like, a dude and a company that's, you know, a global, like, corporation, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
For me, it was mostly curiosity. I just wanted to see. I thought maybe I would build them, too, but I just never did, so it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, you always end up with, like, more shit than you have time to build. Like, I bought other stuff that was just, like, random lots on eBay where, like, there's no way of telling, you know. Like, it could be anything. So you don't know what you're getting, so. But also, like, I mean, it's one thing. I feel, especially for like Oldhammer and stuff, because on one hand, there's a lot of those figures you just can't get anymore.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about, like models that got away, and there's a lot that are, you know, there was only so many made. Some of those are not being sold off. Some have been lost, destroyed, thrown out, or something. So like, if there were 5,000 of a particular Space Marine ever made, that's a cap. Mm-hmm. And now there may only be like 500 of those that are like in some sort of circulation. So if you really want that model, like you have a limited chance. But then is it like people who buy, you know, like collectible goods where if you got that Space Marine, but then it's a recast, like would it not be the same? Like if you're a real collector, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to complete your collection, then you can never get the one.
Yeah. It's like
specific. Well, miniature.
You take the recast so you can have the model that you've always been lusted after, or does it have to be like a real Games Workshop cast with like the lead fucking rotting away and everything? Yeah. Because
right?
A lot of them are also going to be like pretty bad shape.
Yeah. And there's also the folks who will take a classic model miniature and they'll redo it. They're trying to make it look as close as possible, but you know, they change the little things. Maybe they give them proportions. They make it so their hips aren't actually distended in strange ways. You know, just modernize it slightly, but it's still definitely ripping off that miniature. But they put effort into it too, you know.
Yeah, like, I don't want to say, I think if that's the only thing you do, maybe at some point you should like create something of your own. You know, it's hard to say. And I don't want to be like too, because somebody's going to point out that like Rogue Hammer is not exactly the most original thing anyone has ever written, right? Yeah. But I think it's like there was a musician, I forget who it was. It was like a rock musician who said that like you can like rip something off like a quarter of the time. So like if you write four songs, three of them should be pretty new. And then you can have one that's like a homage to a song you liked, or you reuse as a riff, or you kind of like do the same idea or take, but you do it like your way. Like you can rip off one, then you have to go make three new songs. So I don't remember. It was some like old rock dude who was like fat and deranged. So
back in the day when everyone played everyone else.
Yeah, I mean they didn't give a shit. Like sample industry was like completely like renegade until finally people started suing over it, and then everyone got mad because it sucked.
I would love to see someone take like classic Battletech sculpts and redo them to modernize them, but also keep them like janky looking.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, that would be like a cool project that they'll probably never do officially. So the only way to do it would be unofficially.
Yeah. Like old Mutant Chronicles minis, like the old Warzone minis and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like it's completely like IP theft, but also would be really cool.
Yeah, even a lot of old, you know, like old D&D minis, like the original, like Ralph Hartha stuff and old Grenadier minis. There's a lot of those where like, I mean, you do see some companies that are making stuff in that style.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like some of it is out there. Like you can still buy a lot of the Grenadier stuff, which is cool. It actually holds up surprisingly well.
Yeah, Grenadier is awesome. But yeah, when you like look at like the way they sculpted the armor and everything, it's like, yeah, no one does that anymore. It was like a very specific aesthetic, you know, of the 70s or early 80s.
Yeah, they all have like that slightly like chunky feel to them. Like you just they fit. Yeah, they're just so perfectly like a time capsule. Yeah.
Or gaming. Just like even style choices. Like oh, there's that guy with his thigh high boots for some reason. And
yeah,
why?
And
I don't know.
And of course, everyone has their arms in the air like they're celebrating.
Cross swords. <know.
laughs> Yeah. Maybe it's a book and just like a hand doing the horns or something. So that's the victory pose. Like there's a lot of that stuff that could be brought back, but then maybe we also should want it to be like modernized a little bit. Like I know a lot of people would absolutely like kill for like a redo of the classic like Space Marine like RTB plastic set.
Yeah.
But if that happened, wouldn't people probably want a version that was like fitted a little better and like the arms fit better, you know, like you can tidy it up.
You did get pretty close anyway with the new Horus Heresy stuff. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Those are really nice. They kind of
even kept like the weird like sandal toes.
Yes.
Like I thought for sure they'd get rid of sandal toes, but they left them.
Yeah. I love the rounded missile launchers they use for Horus Heresy, which is the original ones. They have that very sort of like rounded organic appearance.
Yeah. So weird. Yeah, they didn't redo everything the same, but there was a lot of stuff, you know, they did a pretty good job on.
Yeah. And I think that really, like, helps like bring back some of those cool things, but in a way that's, you know, we can embrace a little bit of the time that's gone by, right?
Yeah. And of course, those were official, so no one can argue with that.
No, this is true. They are like literally. I remember the brief time I played Space Marine in tournaments, I had a handful of Rogue Trader minis. And even at the time, this is third edition, they were already starting to be like a head shorter than regular Space Marines. Mm-hmm. So they look kind of weird, but they also had like weapons that, you know, like shuriken catapults and auto guns and stuff. So,
yeah.
but I would just sneak them in as like standard Space Marines and bolt guns and just wait for somebody to like notice that, like, oh shit.
That's not WYSIWYG.
Yeah, but totally. Those are tournament legal models. Mm-hmm. The real question is if those chibi Warhammer models they did are tournament legal.
I don't know if I ever saw those.
Yeah, you should look them up. They were like cute. It was like a limited range. It was like a Sister of Battle. I think it was like a Gene Sealer and some stuff. But they were like oversized, like chibi models.
Yeah.
But they were, I think they were made by Games Workshop, so they should be tournament legal.
Yeah. Just get a whole army of them.
Yeah. They were like, I don't know, $30 a pop. So, which nowadays is like barely more expensive than Space Marines anyway.
When I originally thought of this topic, the WYSIWYG, I was thinking of it because of Pillage, which the game mechanics specifically say, like, you can't say a guy holding like a two-handed Dane axe is a guy with a spear and a shield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if he's not wearing armor, you can't say he has armor.
All right.
Like, it's all very specific. So, like, you have to have these miniatures match this loadout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I thought it was kind of like a good design choice, honestly. I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, so it's like the clarity thing, right? Like, if I'm looking at the table and I see you have two dudes over there with spears, then in my head, you know, I don't know how spears work that game, but, you know, let's say they're better at defending or something. You know, in my head, maybe I want to, like, play the game a little differently. But then it turns out that they actually have, like, repeating axes and a toaster.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe I would have, like, if I was fighting the Viking with the toaster, I would definitely, like, do it differently. I would probably just hit him with an axe.
And I've definitely been in that situation too, where I just didn't realize what that model was
and what
gets slaughtered. Like, it's like, okay, oh, I thought it was just a regular guy. No, it turns out it's like your most powerful unit in the army. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And every group has like the one dude who's like a little convenient with that. Like the guy who has a special grenade is always the guy who's closest to you.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. Sometimes
it is like a matter of like proxy error. So, you know, like sometimes I just don't know what the units are because they're not anything like the official units. And sometimes it's my ignorance. Sometimes I just didn't realize that one particular model actually was the proper one. And it is one that can murder everyone I have.
I think everyone has done that in Battletech. If you're if you're using mechs that you don't have models for and you end up mixing up two of them, and it turns out you've been like marking all the damage on the wrong guy. Cause the Griffin model is actually like the Marauder or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it's like, fuck. How do you like even unravel the whole thing? Because the whole game is broken now.
Yeah, exactly. I've definitely done that.
I think
marked down to the wrong unit. It's like, oh, oops.
Yeah. Especially if you have more than like, even with four, sometimes it's like, who took the PPC shot? Because that dude is over there and he can't see for shit.
Yep.
I think there's also an element of, it's like a social expectation, right? Like if you're playing with a group, I'm always reminded there was a guy many years ago in a Reddit post. Because people were talking about the vibe in the groups they were playing with, and this guy was he was clearly like an older guy, and he said one of the rules they had was that you had to have a painted army. They would play smaller games with you, so if you can paint three squads, then they would play a game that was three squads. But after like the first time you played, you had to have your shit painted. That was the rule. It didn't have to be fantastic. He showed some pictures and they were like normal, you know, they were not bad, just normal armies, but your shit had to be painted, and people got like super mad about it because like, how dare you, like, I have no arms and blah blah blah. And the guy's explanation was like, no, like, we're all like older guys, we get together specifically, like, we play games to see like a cool, you know, table with terrain and painted miniatures and like the spectacle of it. So you can't show up with your sprue army or like your rattlecan Necrons, you know, and
we're playing. It always, we show up with Necrons.
yeah. Especially, I mean, as long as your Necron has the Danax, you know, he's technically like tournament legal. But, you know, like, those guys had a very specific idea what they wanted to play. They wanted to play a game that looked good, you know. And they weren't master painters, but, like, it's the old weasel thing, right? Like, okay armies on okay terrain will look great in aggregate. So, you know, if you're showing up to a group like that and you're, like, being a butt about, you know, you want to use your shitty void minis or whatever, maybe that's just the wrong group for you. Maybe that's the wrong people to play with, like... You know, because it's okay to be, like, we always talk about, like, you know, you don't want people to be elitist and, like, gatekeeping people. But at the same time, it's okay to have, like, a standard for your table.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
You're going to be spending, like, 5 hours in this game.
Yeah, it's still a social contract.
Yeah, like, 2 hours setting up, 2 hours to argue about the rules, and then 1 hour to go for lunch. and then the game is over.
Yeah, and you're like, we ran out of time. We'll just roll a d6. Whoever gets highest.
Score. Yeah, yeah. You can go for snacks afterwards. Argue about who would have won.
Yeah, I was thinking another element of WYSIWYG can also kind of like overlap into terrain and cover and things like that. I was listening to a Hobby Homies battle rap, and they were talking about, you know, like, I intended to be in cover. You know, and that's something I've heard in the past too. Like, sometimes people get very anal about cover. You know, you're obviously not in cover. It's like,
yeah.
You know, you can't necessarily WYSIWYG it with your miniature. You know, like, I intended to be in cover, but the miniature just isn't quite working in that particular terrain piece.
Yeah. That's like the eternal, you know, or back in the day when people would model like their Eldar dreadnoughts, like crouching, so they would be shorter, so they could like hide behind units and stuff. And it was like, as hilarious as that is, but like, maybe you're like missing the point a little bit. If that's like how the game is going, you know. But, you know, again, if it's like a tournament thing where you want everything to be like very, very precise, you don't want, if I can see your model and it's clearly not in cover, then that should be the expectation. Whereas if we're playing sort of like, you know, like if you put your dude like by a corner, you know, just ask, like, is he supposed to be like in cover at the corner? And, or is he supposed to be like out of sight, you know? Like, just kind of check. But in a tournament, you don't really do that. You just kind of hope the dude is, like, too far out, and then you nail him for his mistake on your turn.
I wonder if anyone ever just did, like, glue every single miniature, like, crouch prone.
I'm sure that is a thing out there. There used to be a range of, they were, like, 6mm, I think, World War II minis, and they were all, like, cast on the base as prone.
Oh, yes.
So they were just, like, little, like, you know. I mean, they just look like little, like, wobbly pieces of metal. They barely look like anything. But, you know, I think there was some company that also had some that were like, Eureka for 20mm World War II. They have these that are supposed to be, like, soldiers in foxholes. So it's just, like, a little, like, bit of dirt with, like, helmets and rifles.
There we go. Yeah, they just move everywhere.
So, yeah. They just move their foxholes with them.
Yeah. I'm in the bunker now in my foxhole.
Portable bunkers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there is an element of that where it becomes, you know, I think people used to call it like modeling for effect.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're measuring from the gun barrel, then put like an extra long barrel on your tank. You get like three more inches of range.
People get like really angry about base sizes. They're like, well, I mean, as long as you're measuring from base to base, then it's good. But if you're doing like from center base to center base...
Yeah, because I guess there's a bunch of stuff with, like, how many dudes can that guy fight? And, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff is, like, the fucking worst. we ran into this, actually, with the paranoia rules. We had to double-check something, because I didn't realize that the minis are actually on 30mm bases, and not 25s. And there had been some specific stuff, because I'd originally said, you know, like, put your model so the bases don't overlap, but...
Oh, excuse me.
Bless you. A lot of like board corridors, you can't get two dudes with 30mm bases next to each other. If you have like corridor tiles from like board games and stuff. So we have to like go back and just not say that part. I think a lot of that stuff kind of comes because you mostly see in like the sort of tournaments type of scenes where anything that can give you, because if you have something that like, if I use this base instead of that base, I can fit like one more guy in every close combat or something. If you're playing like normally, nobody gives a shit, but when you have the internet and everyone is copying each other's armies and models and stuff, suddenly like everyone is basing their models like that so they can get the extra guy, and suddenly like the whole game like works differently. So maybe it's different for like the tournament nerds have to be hardcore about it, I guess.
Yep.
So, but we all, just like you don't have to play with the guys who want you to paint your Necrons, you also don't have to like play a tournament.
Yeah, you never have to play a tournament,
right? I mean, maybe there's like one guy out there who just has to, like, otherwise he loses his inheritance from his family.
Well, yeah, there we go. Stipulation from his father-in-law.
Yeah. Has to go to
the Games Workshop.
Yep. You get 25% of the empire, but you have to win with this shitty-ass org army. It's like the script of like a terrible movie or something.
Honestly, sounds like an awesome movie now.
Yeah, it could be. Let's be honest. There has been very few movies that have portrayed tabletop gaming in a positive light.
Yeah, it's true. Has there been any, really?
I mean, there was a Tom Hanks movie.
What did he do?
Way back, I don't remember what it was called, like Dangerous Dungeons or something. It was basically a movie about like that.
Well, it was like role-playing, wasn't himself. It?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Dungeons and Dragons, but I don't think they could call it that.
Yeah. Demons.
But yeah. Demons. Dwellers. Dices or something. Wasn't there some movie where they showed a Napoleonic like minis battle in? It was some like detective novel or something where the character plays Napoleonic miniatures. Maybe it was only in the book. I definitely remember the book having a section where the detective is like solo gaming like Waterloo, and it talks about like rolling dice and like stuff. So it was like very obvious what was going on. It was written by somebody who knew what was going on.
Oh yeah. Just for, yeah, like a little rule set in there, just hide it.
Yeah just like, oh, okay. Napoleon rolled an 8, that's pretty good.
I'm just gonna say a quick hello to Mini Warbutt. Howdy,
hey, see that is our sole live listener.
That's right. If you got any thoughts on WYSIWYG, definitely type them in the comments below.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or chat, I should really. Yeah. Oh, you could do both. Double.
You could technically type the same question in each place.
Yeah.
So you could like write us a letter and mail it to Canada.
And my last thought on WYSIWYG was,
oh, like, wait, sci-fi. You can't mail it to Canada because you guys have like a mail strike right now, don't you?
No, we got like occasional mail.
Oh, okay.
So like every, it's like we get mail like, you know, once or twice a week.
Oh, okay. So you can mail. Of course. Stranger Things has some Dungeons and Dragons. Although,
and that movie was... Zero Charisma, of course, was all about role playing.
Yeah. That one was pretty good. Yeah, I will say Stranger Things had, I'm forgetting it now because I remember like watching it and thinking like, this was definitely written by people who know what Dungeons and Dragons is, but they also don't know the rules. Because they were having them like roll to hit for a fireball spell, or it was something like that, where every D&D player would be like, that doesn't require a hit roll.
No. Oh.
So, yeah. Frauds. But I think it was like, I'm trying to remember if they ever say Dungeons and Dragons is that. Like, it's obviously supposed to be D&D, but I don't remember if they say it or if they just like talk about
it. But they made the module for D&D. So, I mean, yeah, they definitely tied together.
Yeah. So they, although that came after, so maybe they didn't have the, because sometimes you get where you don't have the rights to do something, but then you show off your almost thing, and then like suddenly when it's good, you can get,
you scoundrels. Okay, you can have it.
Yeah.
the Demigorgon miniature, like skyrocketed in price on eBay, I remember.
Oh, I bet.
And, people were like, guys, don't buy it on eBay for like hundreds of dollars. You could just buy from this website that still sells the exact miniature.
Yeah.
They still make it. It's still there.
Yeah. Real one. You can get the real deal.
Yeah.
So, but it, no. See, that's another, we were talking about TV shows before the we started the show. And I was mentioning that I'm like so bad at watching TV shows because like if I get to the end of the first season of a show, like the ending better have been good because that's probably as far as I'll ever get. And Stranger Things is like that. And luckily, the ending was really good. I liked it a lot. And then I just kind of was done. Like, I don't know if the second season is supposed to be better or worse or the same. But like, I watched a bunch of Stranger Things and then it ended and that was good.
Okay. Yeah, first season. That's all you need.
Yeah.
No, they're all good. The the Mind Flayer, as Mini Wormut says, was in later seasons, and they specifically called him the Mind Flayer.
Oh,
which I think is licensed or that trademarked. Might
be, because I think that's one of those creatures that you can't just like use on your own. So, at some point they definitely at least like got the rights to do it, which I'm sure like didn't hurt Wizards of the Coast at all, because it probably got a whole bunch of people interested in Dungeons and Dragons, or at least owning some Dungeons and Dragons stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone probably bought at least a little bit. I know the kids were playing it for a while too when they all got into Stranger Things.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they're playing it anymore. They went back to
Warbucks. Yeah. But you know, I was listening the other day because the kid was doing something with his friends. He was, you know, on voice chat, and I was listening. Mm-hmm. I was like, that sounds kind of like they're playing a game, but I'm not sure. Maybe they're just like talking while playing video games or something. Because he's played a little bit of RPGs with us in the past. And then I asked him later, I was like, oh, yeah, we were playing Lancer, which I guess is like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, that's like a real game, you know?
Yeah, I've heard of Lancer.
Yeah, it's the mech like
role-playing game. That's all.
Yeah, they even have the rule book at like Barnes & Noble's here. It's huge. I don't know if it's like new edition or something, but yeah, it's like a giant fucking book.
Oh, crazy.
So it looked really cool, too.
Yeah. Oh, if the price is right, maybe I'll grab it. I often buy role-playing books just to never play them, so.
That's fair.
Let's see. Oh, Mini Wormut says, I'm trying to finish off painting the last two crew members of Hellhound for 5P. So that's one of his two crews he's running based on friends. They were organizing things through the Facebook chat, and Facebook decided just to not have community chats anymore.
All right.
They're like, you know what? Let's not do that anymore, guys.
Yeah, let's get rid of a feature that people actually use and enjoy.
Yeah, exactly. So. And then what we'll do, though, is we'll give you the AI robot who will just make random posts and ask questions. Really dumb questions.
Yeah. I forget what I was looking at the other day. It was because before I deleted my account, like Reddit was do the same thing, but it'll like give you AI generated questions that are similar to the sub you're browsing. Like you go click on a post and there'll be like a bunch. And the idea is you click on one of those and it'll then search it for you.
Oh, okay.
But like for some reason they were like, because it was a sports thing, but the questions were about like the wrong sport. Like it was a soccer sub and they were like baseball questions. I was like, this is the right question for a completely different like experience that I'm having. So like, the AI thing is, but you know, that's free content, I suppose. Yeah. At some point,
it's kind of interesting. Like the AI and Facebook didn't go to all the groups, because I managed a few groups and it only ever appeared in one for some reason.
Oh,
it's like, you guys get an AI and you can turn it off now. But like at the time, they're like, yeah, you just get it. It's just happening.
Yeah, I think sometimes they roll out like they'll pick like, I don't know, 10,000, you know, accounts or whatever, and they'll just roll it out to them.
Yeah.
Then if it explodes, it's only those 10,000 people. But you don't get any chance of like deciding if you want to like do it or not.
Yeah, exactly. So you are opted in automatically.
Always in.
So yeah, I guess good talk on WYSIWYG. There's no real answer to WYSIWYG.
No,
it's really such a gray area, you know?
Yeah, and ultimately it's just like whatever your table is okay with, you know, if you're fine with the Coke can dreadnought.
Yeah. But I think that WYSIWYG can be gamified to your advantage, you know, like I can't have this new unit I really want that's powerful until I paint it, because it has to be exactly that unit. I can't just like put a proxy in there. No, it has
to be, well, you know, it does get you motivated to actually do some painting.
Converting or things, you know, building.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people use the like parsecs and leaks and counter tables as like, it's really just like a paint generator.
Yeah.
It's like, oh boy, I rolled up 5 mercenaries with a rattle gun. So that means I need to go buy 5 models and I need to make sure one of them has a machine gun and they gotta be painted, and then, you know. So if you're using it that way.
Sci-fi is kind of strange, though. I mean, like, if you look at, like, Men in Black, right? The guy got, like, that tiny little gun. But the tiny little gun was super powerful.
Yeah, the cricket. The noisy cricket.
Yeah, so then, like, what does it actually matter? Like, what guns your figures are holding if it's sci-fi?
Well, it matters if it specifically says in the style guide that it must be, you know, But yeah, I mean, it's, again, when it's the agnostic thing, you kind of just get to declare what it is. But then I think you do kind of have to, if you're going to be serious about it, which you don't have to, but you kind of have to like stick with it. Like, if these guys are this particular alien, then those guys are that alien. So, you know, like, at least I think if you're like trying to do it, like, you know, you're trying to seriously paint them, because then you get that same, you almost like invent your own game line or figure line.
Yeah, your own lore, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, like maybe you have a bunch of Gene Stealer models, but they have never been Gene Stealers because you don't play Warhammer. They have been whatever creature in whatever game. You know? Yeah. So that Gene Stealer still like means something to you, like seeing that model, but it means it's just a completely different thing. So I think that could be really cool. Mm-hmm.
And Mini Wormut says, to answer your question about WYSIWYG, yes, I like it because that's what you get with my solo games.
Yeah.
So he's a gamified one for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the challenge. Make sure you have those miniatures represent the thing that you've rolled up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's a way of, I mean, it's a way of getting like more immersion into the game, right? Like, you're, because you worked on these guys. Then I feel a little bit bad if the actual gun battle is over in like 10 minutes. But
it does happen.
Yeah. That's the nature of it. You know, yeah.
My first game of Parsecs, I rolled up one enemy. I can't remember why, but yeah. So yeah, like my, I think it was like five guys at the time.
Yeah.
Like a crew of five, and then there was one guy, one enemy. It's like, okay, well, at least I can see how it works.
Yeah, and it'll be done. Get to maybe let him take a couple of shots just to give him a chance.
Yeah.
So, but then at some point the game will throw some stupid thing at you, and you will not regret taking the easy fight and getting the XP. So. Yeah, do we want to chat a little bit about Wargames Atlantic?
I think so. Yeah, just a little tiny bit.
Because
we need to know more, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the problem, that nobody knows more. Because big things were promised, and then everyone is like, well, maybe. So for those who aren't familiar, and I don't want to recap the entire thing, because then if I get it wrong, then it sounds bad. So you can go look it up. But basically, back in them days, there was a company doing a game line called Defiance, and they had a big Kickstarter, as you often do, with big promises and lots of models, and then people didn't get their big promises, and they definitely didn't get their lots of models. They were big mad. The dudes at Frothers, before that website was shut down, were like, I think, burning Tony Reid in effigy on a daily basis, because they were like particularly like incensed about it. And then he kind of disappeared, and then like I think 8 years passed, and he suddenly announces that he's actually been running Wargames Atlantic, you know, beloved supplier of plastic kits to the entire Wargaming world for this entire time. And now he's going to like track everyone down who was owed money or minis from Defiance. And he's going to like give them money or give them like more models worth of Wargames Atlantic stuff than they had paid for originally, which was like, I forget the number I saw, but it was like a lot of money that was out there, like $64,000 or something, which is not nothing. I don't know how much like revenue he generates, but like it's a good chunk.
Yeah, that's a big chunk.
So there was a lot of like people started asking a whole bunch of questions, right? So because some people were asking like, how did nobody figure it out? And some people were saying like, well, people kind of knew, but they were sort of keeping mum, or nobody wanted to come out and say it, that this was probably the same guy. Some people were pointing out that, like, wasn't it a little weird how quickly Wargames Atlantic got, like, up and running with, like, a full production and expertise and a very particular style of miniatures that looked an awful lot like old Wargames Factory and Defiance?
Oh, this so is, like, just like that Wargames Factory kit, except for it's better quality. Strange.
Yeah, you know. So, like, in hindsight, maybe there were some signs all along, but you know, you don't really think about this. You certainly don't think that the same guy is like trying to hide in plain sight for 8 years in the same industry. Like, usually if you're like a scammer, you then go like make a different scam. Unless you're like into crypto, then you can just scam the same literal same guys again.
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword, painted goblins till tea, then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie. Swap dragons for deadlines, your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard even more on your head, but you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm. But like, you, not only you would like fuck off and do something else, like you sell like a computer keyboard and then you don't give anyone their keyboards. Then you go on to like do something different, make a Nintendo machine or something. Mm-hmm. Like you don't come back to the same industry and then like run it legitimately. Which is what makes the story so like bananas, right?
Yeah, it's a banana story. It's like a Cinderella story, kind of.
Yeah, like, and it's one of those, like, on one hand, like, you kind of want it to just all, like, have the tidy ending. Like, the guy is, like, good for it, and he tracks everyone down, they get their minis, or get their money back. Like, but on the other hand, there's also that voice of, like, is that, like, as tidy as it is? Like, is that, do stories like this end that way? Because I feel like they don't, usually.
And if it goes south... Where do we
like what happens if it gets screwed up again? Because in his like retelling of it, and I'm gonna, just in case like an angry man listens to this video, we're giving our opinions for parody and or other purposes. We are not speculating anything on what is or is not the case. And also don't sue us, please. But as it appeared in his like telling of the story, it definitely seemed a lot like he was the one guy who had like everything together and everyone else screwed up around him.
Mm-hmm.
But then as we talked about before we started recording, like anyone who has dealt with like Chinese manufacturing and will also know that what he's saying sounds like stuff that happens a lot. And even like not, and I'm not even like necessarily bagging on Chinese manufacturing, because you can get the same issue anywhere else, you know. All it takes in a whole chain of product is like one company fucking it up, right? Like if you can get the sprues made but you can't get the boxes, you're just as fucked as you were before, right?
It's kind of like Robotech RPG Tactics, you know, like their lack of knowledge really didn't help them. They needed someone who understood what was going on over there.
They needed somebody to be able to make the project as foolproof as possible, so when it gets sent to a manufacturer that don't know shit about it, there are as few things that can go wrong as possible. They obviously didn't have that because they didn't understand what they were making either. And maybe that is the case, like that was the case for Defiance, you know, like maybe you know, they always say like, oh, the truth is somewhere in the middle, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Even if everything he's saying is absolutely true and he had it all together, he obviously has figured out how to do better stuff and more reliably and source better vendors and stuff like in the years since. Like people haven't had like, I know Wargames Factory had some issues, but I think like everyone has basically been happy with the Wargames Atlantic.
They are, yeah, they were celebrated as heroes right up until the announcement. Yeah. And then I'm not sure.
Right. And a lot of people were like pretty dubious about it. Like the only people I ever see who bag on them is literally just like, because they don't like the style of minis or whatever, which is fine. You know, like if you're not into that, their vibe. So, but it's also like, if this is the guy, and I have no reason to doubt that it isn't the guy. Nobody has like come out and questioned that, right?
Yeah. That's right.
So, but he doesn't have anything to, like, obviously clearing his name, but you know, like in a way, he doesn't have anything to gain by doing this, right? Like,
yeah, that's right.
Like, yeah.
It, yeah, lots to lose. Nothing to gain, really.
Yeah, like, if he fucks this whole thing up, again, it could be the literal same thing that, you know, like a supply issue. So something goes wrong, he can't do it. And you know, there's got some of those dudes, because people will hang on to, like, unfulfilled Kickstarters, like, fucking, like, hate posting about it for, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
They won't let that shit go, you know. It's like, if you ever had a friend who, like, had their first girlfriend and now it's been 15 years and they're still mad about it and they were together for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, they just have fucking issues. So, you know, like nerds and Kickstarter is kind of like that, where they can hold on to some things. It's also like, because I was talking to somebody, maybe it was Torben, about it, that let's say you spent $200 back in the day that you didn't get for your minis. If you're getting $200 off Wargames Atlantic figures today, that's a lot better product than what $200 of Defiance would have gotten you in 2016 or whatever, right? Like, the quality is better, they're crisper, they're just, like, so much better than what was plastic kits at the time, right? And especially, like, I don't want to say third-party plastic, because, you know, it has nothing to do with Games Workshop, but, like, small company plastics, it took a long time for them to kind of get up to the same standard as, like, the big model kit companies that have been doing it for, you know, decades. So if you're taking the deal and getting the same amount of money in Wargames Atlantic figures, you're getting much nicer stuff than you would have gotten back then. And you would have, like, lost those minions or misplaced them or sold them by now anyway.
Yeah,
that's right. Let's be honest.
Dug them out of your closet.
Yeah. Whereas if you take the money, you're actually getting a much worse deal, because if you spent $200 back then in tasty $16, in 2025, those don't buy shit now. That'll give you, like, two Snickers and a sugar-free soda.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I'm just gonna, like, say a quick hello to Mini Potts.
Hey.
He says, I sort of commend his comeback, trying to make good. You don't forget the wrong, though, and that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has to.
It's kind of a, yeah, it's a weird situation. So,
yeah, like, on one hand, I think, like, I definitely want this to just end well. Like, he does the right thing, or as to as many people as possible, because there's going to be some you can't reach. There's going to be some who don't, like, give it, they don't play minis anymore. Maybe there's one guy out there who, like, gave up on the hobby entirely because he got scammed by Defiance.
Yeah. You know, and then definitely some people have passed on. They're not around anymore. They kickstarted and they passed away.
There's no way to get, you know,
reconcile with them.
Yeah, like, literal unreachable, or they moved out of the country, or they just don't play games anymore. You know, they just are doing different things. But yeah, like, I think, you know, like, realistically, I hope everyone wants to see it, like, made well or done the best thing he can. And I think the way he's doing it is the best thing you can do, and say, okay, here's what, you know, I can't get you the models that you were promised back then, but I can get you something pretty cool. So, yeah. But I think there's also going to be, like, a lot of questions about it, because people are going to be wanting to know, like, why did it take this long? You know, like, that's a long time. As opposed to,
I think he did mention, though, that he just didn't have the capital, but now he's getting to the point where Games Atlantic is a strong enough company that he could actually,
yeah, I mean,
take revenue and put it back in towards the people.
Yeah, who didn't, I mean, fare well. The number I saw somewhere was 64,000. I might, don't hold me to that, because I might have read it wrong, or the person might have been wrong. It was just looking real quick. Like, that's a healthy chunk of money, you know, even for, like, we think of companies like Wargames Atlantic being, or even Warlord or something, like, huge businesses, but, like, a lot of them are running a lot thinner, like, margin-wise than we think.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
especially in his situation, where he wouldn't have had the capital, because he basically lost everything to begin with.
Yeah. So, well, as it turns out, he did have something sitting around, because he got in business again pretty fast.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, people are just confident enough in him. Like, his ideas were good. People just figured, so.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the argument that I think he hints at in the message, where he's basically saying that if he had done it, I think he says that if he had done it sooner, people wouldn't have taken his word for it. Because,
yeah, that's right.
You had, like, you had to establish, like, Wargames Atlantic as a real company that is delivering product. Like, I have, I'm not a huge customer. I have a couple of boxes of something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, I have some sitting right in front of me. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and they're perfectly great, like, figures. So, yeah, it's a bizarre story, but it's not very often that we get, like, that we get a story like that, or, like, it's something wild. Yeah, I feel like the RPG folks have way more, like, drama and, like, stuff going on. So, many gamers are kind of boring. So, when we finally get something, we got to, like, you got to make something out of it, right?
Yeah. Especially when it's a Scooby-Doo situation. Pull off the mask.
Yeah, like, oh, shit, it was Tony Reed all along. So I was looking at, like, War Game or Lit Adventure, and there were definitely people who were still, like, big mad about it. And I was like,
yeah,
maybe you should also just, like, let it go. Like if this is the first time you had ever lost money on Kickstarter, like,
yep.
You know, like, I hate to tell you what happens on eBay then.
Yep, don't do that.
Mini Pots is saying, that does suck, dying before you get your minis. Some shipping times, man. Yeah.
There it gets better.
Some things I've ordered where I've definitely worried that I was going to die before I got it, because it took so long.
When I worked at Sportcheck, someone had bought a bike online and they just never picked it up. And it was like a year later. I'm like, you know, we built the bike for the guy. It's just hanging around in the ceiling. Like, whatever happened to this person? And we had to investigate. And I was like, oh, he passed away.
Wow.
Before he had a chance to pick it up. So that was it. So
yeah.
They just charged his credit card back. And
I mean, goes to the estate, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in this case, because there was a credit card was still there, they could just move the money back, I guess, or something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, all is well that ends well, but it didn't because the guy fucking died.
Yeah. Someone enjoyed that bike.
Yeah. At some point, it becomes somebody's bike, the haunted bike.
Yeah.
Do you want to see the dead man's bike? So, but yeah, you know, it's a weird and wild story. But yeah, as well as one we can kind of check back in with.
If it ends well, we'll just forget about it anyway. So that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, people get some swag, and hey, like I said, you're definitely getting better stuff now than you would have gotten back then. So, in a way, like you just got to wait for an upgrade.
And yeah, lastly, we're gonna talk a little paranoia.
Yeah, get paranoid. You know what's the worst thing about paranoia?
Ooh, what's that?
It's always worse than you fear.
It's always worse than you fear.
It's from an Danish rock band song. So, but yeah, paranoia. So originally it was a role-playing game, kind of a weird subversive game, because every role-playing game has a little blurb in the beginning that it's not about competition, you're working together, and it's about telling a story. But paranoia is kind of explicitly about competition. You are all clones living inside kind of like a Fallout vault run by an insane computer. And you are basically all trying to like stab each other in the back or inform on each other as traitors, mutants. Everyone belongs to like a secret society. Everyone has like mutant superpowers. And because you die all the time, you get 5 clones. So you can like respawn in the game. So if somebody kills you, you can come back and get revenge on them. So it's sort of like the opposite of how normal role-playing games work, where you are explicitly trying to screw each other. And that's the intended way of playing the game. And the overlords had gotten the rights to publish a board game for Paranoia. So they had some miniatures on hand. So I got the offer of, hey, do you want to write us a miniatures game for Paranoia? And I was like, that is the weirdest shit I've ever heard. Of course I want to write a miniatures game for Paranoia. And pretty free hands to do it as well, which led to me sitting and racking my brain how you turn a sort of semi-competitive role-playing game into a miniatures game. So the core setup for the game works the same as it did in the RPG. You are each playing a troubleshooter. You have clone replacements ready, you know, standing by. You all have like mutant superpowers. And you get a mission from the computer. And you generate randomly what the table looks like. So there are areas of the table that will be higher security clearances. There are different features like computer consoles and vending machines. And there are random NPCs. So there might be security guards who are keeping an eye on you. There might be random clones. There might be a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Like, that's some variety. And you then have to carry your missions. Some of the mutations are in... Some of them are, like, benefits. Like, your character can, like, have extendo arms or can... They have, like, regeneration or something. But some of them will also get in the way. Like, your mutant is, like, rapidly melting down going berserk and will just attack random characters. You each have like a secret society mission, which might be to like kill a particular character or prevent someone else from doing their mission, or maybe your mission is to prevent the whole team from completing their mission. So between all of this and whether or not your character has been denounced as a traitor, which can happen if you like attack somebody you're not supposed to, or if you enter a restricted area or certain other things, it's basically like procedural chaos. Where any number of things can happen, and the mission will spin wildly out of control as you're trying to both complete the mission, because you do get points for doing that, but also complete your own secret society mission. And yeah, so it's procedurally generated. It's not a campaign game. You just set it up and play. It really is set up to play more like a board game in some ways. Where it's kind of a one-off experience. It can be played if you have board game tiles. You can play it on those. You can also use like just normal terrain because part of it's called Alpha Complex, but that could be like an underground park, or sometimes like Alpha Complex like breaks apart and you can go outside and there might be monsters out there. So you can use regular gaming terrain as well. Like, again, it's like run by an insane computer. So maybe like there is a section that is like a scaled representation of Stalingrad or something in Alpha Complex. And your troubleshooters have to go in there, but it's overrun by killer robots. So it's very sort of goofy and weird and funny, and completely demented. Now, I don't remember if they used the tagline after all. Oh, they did. So it's called the Uncooperative Miniatures Game, because Modiphius is big on their cooperative minis games. Yeah. This is a different, you know, a different vibe. It will use the same miniatures that they produced for the board game, because they did a Paranoia board game. And they're pretty nice minis. They have like troubleshooters and security guards and stuff. From monsters and aliens, you're going to be just grabbing whatever you have sitting around. The rules are kind of a spin-off, like a distant cousin to like 5 Parsecs, just because that's what they figured was easiest. But it's kind of been slimmed down a lot. So like you don't really have like stats necessarily. You just, most things you do, you're just trying to roll a 4 or better on a die to do it.
Oh, okay. It's a good old game of 4-ups.
Yes. Sometimes you can have like, you get a, like you might have an ability or a weapon that gives you like, you always get a plus to shoot or something.
Okay.
But your main thing then is like your actual mutation. So like, for example, if you're a blank slate, then anytime a status effect is applied to your character, you can roll 4 up and it will happen to a random character on the table instead. So like if you get poisoned, you can, and that kicks in, then a different character gets poisoned instead, completely randomly. Minipons asks, no character advancement. No, because it's not a campaign game. It's a one-off. Because remember, your clones are probably going to be dead. You can progress within the mission, both improving your security clearance, but mostly through acquiring like equipment and stuff. So it is really intended as like a one-off kind of thing. However, in order to give some replay, there's actually more than one way of playing. So there's a standard game, which is just you set up the mission, generate everything randomly, generate your objectives, blah, 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 and you play. You can do that kind of as many times as you want. There is a collection of scenarios, which are basically adding things to the standard play. I forget how many we included. So some of them are very simple, like it's dark and you can't see for shit, or there are monsters invading Alpha Complex. At least one of them is a reference to Aliens, and one of them is a reference to Doom. So I'll let people find those and have some fun with them. One of them is that there's a nuclear reactor that is melting down, and you have to deal with it before the entire table gets obliterated. So the scenarios basically let you like modify the standard gameplay. And I should add here, it is absolutely possible that a mission becomes impossible to play. You might realize that the guy who was carrying the mission critical item just like melted down into an acidic pool of goo and destroyed the item, or that a giant monster ate one of the characters that you needed. That is all part and parcel of Paranoia. In that case, maybe you just go after your secret society missions, or maybe just get the hell out of there before it gets even more crazy. So normally game balance is like a big factor, but for here it's absolutely part of the RPG is that the computer will often assign you missions that are impossible, or it will tell you that you have to go into a high security area, but it will then not give you the security clearance to enter that area, whatever. You need equipment that it won't give you or which doesn't exist. If you are a little more creative than that, you can also play in computer mode. This is basically a miniatures RPG where one player takes a role as a computer. You create the mission and you play it kind of like just a game master. You have control of all the characters. You can give special objectives. You can also allow special things to take place. You can, you know, if a player wants to do something that he can't do in the normal game, you can do it here. Like if he wants to persuade somebody, or if he wants to, somebody wants to climb through the air ducts or something, you can do that in computer mode. You also get some bananas nonsense you can do. Like you can add, I forget what we call them, but you can basically add special rules that you don't tell the player about the scenario. So you might make a rule that in every odd numbered game turn, if anyone fires a weapon, a random player is declared a traitor and is now a target for everybody. So it can be anything like that. And then it's up to the players to like figure it out. Or like if you end every turn that a character is in a particular room, a monster spawns somewhere on the map. It can be anything like that. and you leave it up to the players to figure it out. You do have to tell them if you are using any secret rules like that or not. But it's basically a way of like really getting the paranoia and the uncertainty going. So
okay. Do you have to write it down then?
Yeah, so you have to play it play it square. Like, you can't change it in the way. They have to be established first. Because you have the computer. There's logic to it. So, you can also use computer interference points. So you get points you can spend each turn. And they kind of accumulate. And you can use those to kind of mess with the players. So if you want to put or remove a terrain feature, if you want to change the security clearance of an area, add a new objective to bother them even more, or change one of the objectives when they've almost completed it. You can use interference points to do that. So you basically get to be a to torment the players a little bit. But you still have to kind of play by the rules. And finally, there is a bit of a solo option. They are kind of an addendum, but you can take control of the party of troubleshooters yourself. In that case, it's really more of like survive the random nonsense kind of game. You still have to deal with characters being declared traitors, but in this case, you have to basically decide, because the more traitors are on the board, the bigger the chance that, like, soldiers show up to kill them. So to reduce that or fend that off, you may have to, like, try to get rid of one of your traitors, which turns them into an NPC. So you have to, like, manage how many you got with you.
Okay.
So it's kind of an alternate game mode. And then there's the, I forget what we called it. It's like the survival mode, which is literally just one character, and you're just kind of seeing what happens. So this is sort of the ultimate, like, just sit down and have some fun and see what banana stuff can occur.
Mini Pots has a question about the secret rules. Are they available in solo-ish game or only in versus?
Secret rules won't work in a solo game, unfortunately, because they rely on the computer player knowing what they are so you can apply them, because they sort of, by definition, like, break the rules in some way.
Okay.
So that, however, there are a lot going on already with special conditions, the computer shouting at you and giving you additional objectives through a random table if you're dragging your heels and so on, that... the game will have plenty to challenge you with in solo mode. I appreciate the little, I appreciate the jingle there.
Yeah, yeah.
That was pretty rad. So yeah, solo mode is kind of its own thing. So there are certain things, because of the nature of this game, it's split up a little bit more with certain features that work in certain modes. There's no way of kind of getting around that. So, but yeah, it is a game that you can kind of play in like a multitude of different ways. So yeah, he says,
well, I have a question about the points. So that's in the uncooperative mode, you get points. And so basically whoever just gets the most points wins.
Yeah, so let me find the actual scoring. See, so this is a catch, because when I get the like edited version back, a lot of times stuff has been moved around from the way I wrote it.
Oh, yes.
Because the way I write it is almost always not the best way. So the official name for the score is the Troubleshooter Job Well Done Metric Evaluation Survey Score, which is based on how many clones you had left, how many traitors you killed. Those are worth 1 point each. So that's simple enough. If you completed your secret society objective, you get 2d6 points. So in the role-playing game, there's always a bit of like trying to take credit for everything that happened or make excuses or like sell out your rival. So the role represents that. You also get, everyone gets one die of points if you completed the overall mission. So it's possible if you didn't complete your secret society objective that that role could bring you over anyway.
Okay.
There's also a little bonus. If you complete the mission, the player who lost the most clones get a couple of bonus points for like sacrificing themselves for the cause. Oh. So you technically could come through and win even if you lost all your clones. And there's a little denunciation mechanic where you can declare who was like the biggest traitor. That has a chance of backfiring on you. So basically, everyone writes down, you make a little speech to everybody to say who is the most vile traitor in the group. Then everyone writes it down, but you don't have to actually write down the name that you said.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
then if a single player gets the most denunciation, they lose two dice worth of points. So they were the biggest trader. If two players are tied for the most, then neither of them lose. So they got off with it. And any player that received no denunciations at all gets an extra die of points because they were obviously doing the computer's work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, however, if every player denounces the same person except for that player, the computer decides it's conspiracy and that player just wins outright. So it is absolutely possible to be, you might screw yourself or just get complete chaos. Like you can hang out one player a little too convincingly and they might end up winning, which is very paranoid. Now the scoring is technically optional. You can just say that, hey, we played the game, we had a fun time, and we accidentally like blew up a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know, that's
that does sound fun though, the scoring at the end. It adds quite a bit of, you know, post-game shenanigans.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it felt right to make it kind of like a board game. So there's a definitely more board game vibes in it. Also because a lot of things are just, because paranoia is kind of absurd, you can kind of get away with a lot that you couldn't do in a normal game. Because it's, you know, normally you can't like give the players a mission that they don't have the items to complete or something. But that works in paranoia because maybe you can find a different way around it. Or, you know, maybe the computer is just insane and it assigned you something that you can't complete. So, but yeah, so it's the uncooperative miniatures game. So game of betraying your friends, getting into fights with aliens, and suddenly realizing that things have gone very haywire indeed. And like I said,
I've never asked you to score your rules writing. So like on a... I don't know, like scale of 1 to 10, how would you say this game challenged your, you know, basically established rules writing?
Yeah. Well,
and that's would you say that you accomplished the goals you originally thought that you
I think this up? Is one of the two, the other being Hush Hush, that definitely like challenged it the most because it was adopting something that wasn't a miniatures game at all. And I don't think has ever been a miniatures game to a minis format. Which is really fun to do because you get to kind of think about like, what is the, it's very easy. You could just take all the skills and weapons and stats and just like all of that stuff basically just works if you put it on a board, right? You know, if you move 5 meters, that's just 5 inches. But it's more interesting to like try to reimagine it in the context of miniatures gaming, in the context of how we do things on a tabletop with dice and miniatures. Because there's a lot of things that kind of work differently. So, like when you play the role-playing game, your mutation is almost always something useful because you're playing that character for like 5 hours.
Okay.
Maybe you're playing the clones of that character because you got killed, but it's still your character. Whereas since this is both a shorter game, but also we kind of need to create some conflict, a lot of the mutations are much more erratic than they would be there. And some of them are just downright like negative in effect. in order to get the game kind of moving and sort of throw... You know, it's like walking into a room that's full of fumes and you flick on a lighter to see what happens. You know, that may be good or it may be less so. So, you know, and you can sort of like, you know, like if you have the mutant power meltdown where your character is slowly melting down and you know that you have 2 turns left to go, maybe you want to run stand next to like the guy who's been really pissing you off the whole mission. So when your character melts down, his character is killed instantaneously. Or maybe you make a suicide run at like a monster that's been eating half the squad. Mini Pots is asking, would the tiles be available by themselves? I will ask because the tiles are for the board game. I have only seen the boxes of minis, but I will check and find out. They should sell them separately unless there's some sort of licensing reason they couldn't. I don't know. I had no involvement with the board game, so I don't know like how that all worked. In fact, that's one thing that people might be surprised by because the two games are completely different mechanically. But again, I was given a free hand, and I think the board game guy was too.
Nice.
So,
and you guys never talked?
Literally not. I got some feedback from like the original creators of the RPG, and I got like a list of what stuff was available for the board game because they have like computer consoles and some other things. Actually, the minions are pretty decent. They could be used for a bunch of different stuff. Like, the security guards are pretty cool.
Come on,
I'm getting us some stuff. Yeah, I'm getting us some stuff. We gotta have some swag. We can do our first unboxing.
Woo-woo.
So, but yeah, as usual, if you pre-order it, you get the PDF like right away. There are some, we caught, of course, some bugs and errors and stuff like that. So those will be ironed out as much as we can and fixed in the full version. And then I don't remember, you'd have to look on the website when they say that it's supposed to ship. And then maybe add 1d6 weeks to that. So, yes.
D3 months.
Yeah, especially stateside and in Canadian side, it can be a little rough.
Yeah,
I think the UK folks got the compendium for leagues like pretty quickly, and people in the States were still pretty sour about it. So just factor that in. If you are pre-ordering, you're just gonna have to. That's just how it works.
You get the PDF, and that's what you get. And then you wait.
Then you wait a while, and the PDF should be available standalone once people are getting their pre-orders. That's how it always works. So they want to encourage, plus it, yeah, I don't know, that's just how they do it. Obviously they want to promote people buying the actual book.
Sometimes so. People will say this game is kind of like X game, but could you say in the miniature circle, is there any game that is kind of like this?
No, that's the problem. I've been thinking about that because it's kind of the easiest shorthand, and I'm not trying to be like coy about how this is the most original thing you've ever seen, because a lot of my games are like some other games, sometimes explicitly. But this really isn't like it. It feels the most like a board game, if I'm being honest. Like, I don't know, something like, see, I'm going to say this, but it's not really true. But like the old Space Crusade board game or something, or something like Siege of the Citadel, or like it's just a little bit of vibe. But yeah, honestly, it just, the biggest influence would be the biggest influence would be like board games and stuff like that. There's just not a miniatures game that like feels like it. So,
but if you guys who are listening have a thought, maybe this is like a certain thing, definitely put it in the comments below.
Yes, prove us wrong.
Because it's always good to have a reference anyway. Like if you like this game, check out this game.
It's like, yes, absolutely.
If you like screwing over your friends, paranoia. Yeah,
absolutely. And yeah, it's so weird because I think they even toned down the like 5X, like, so it is called Five Clone. The subtitle is Paranoia and then Five Clones from Alpha Complex. So it's like, it's thrown out there that, yeah, this is a 5X thing, but like, it's definitely like the most removed from how these things usually work. So if you've played Parsex, you will like recognize like certain things, you know, like, it's rolling equal over something to hit. It's rolling equal over toughness to do damage, stuff like that. You can move and like you'll recognize
you charts to roll on. Many charts.
Yes. There's quite a few tables to roll on. So, you know, you'll recognize a lot of things that are familiar and you'll sort of see where things come from. If you like gotten all of the stuff, you're like the hardcore Modiphius 5X guy. You'll see like the evolution between and how the rules change for different like projects and different ideas. So, nice. But yeah, definitely the most like unique. But hold that thought until the project I can't talk about. Can talk about it.
Is it also IP or is it something that's original?
It is IP, and it is a very particular IP that I was very excited about.
Ooh, that's exciting in itself.
Yeah, actually. Absolutely. So people can go like dig. So Paranoia was out of the, nobody would have been able to guess that because I didn't think that was ever going to happen and I had no reason to suspect. But for this one, it's something that people have definitely asked about in the past and it's something that I have wanted to do. So it was kind of an exciting opportunity. Also, the mystery project will be supported by a full line of brand new miniatures. So based on the IP, obviously, but like, there has not been miniatures available for this IP before. And I think I have not seen only like prototype stuff, but I'm sure that, I mean, Modiphius turns out like a pretty nice miniature.
Yeah. So, yeah. About the Fallout stuff when it first came out and it was all very good quality. Even the board game plastic was good.
Yeah. And sometimes like with board game minis, they can be, you know.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, they were pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I ran into trouble with was the plastic like Skyrim skeletons, which are just like awful to assemble. But plastic skeletons are often kind of awful.
You know whose weren't though? War Games Factory.
Do they have good skeletons?
Yes, skeletons in the biz.
All right.
Most people hate them though. I mean, think I'm pretty sure I'm in the minority of people who love plastic war games factory skeletons. Because you have to put the legs into the feet.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you do it on the sprue, then it's very easy. There's no issues.
Usually where the issue comes is when you have to attach the legs to like the hips. Because it's almost impossible to get them to like line up proper.
That's the joy of building skeletons.
Yeah. There was a guy on the Weasel Court who had a, I think it was for a 3D printer, but he was like building new skeletons or something.
Nice.
So people who are on there should go like check it out. Miniputz asked, you already have your next project. Yeah, I have like the next 2.5 projects. So there will be a new 5 Leaks thing, which I don't think I can talk about just yet. There is maybe another IP thing, and there's at least one other thing, and then the project I just talked about. So yeah, it's like lined the fuck up.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like as fast as I can do them. you know, with, you know, getting it right and getting it decent. And Planetfall is still like lurking out there, slowly grinding its way through. I have to mention it because I was new to like lose the ship.
But
it's getting closer. It's all done on my part. And I think the first major pass, because I've given responses to like the editor guy on all of his questions. Okay. So usually when that happens, we're starting to like accelerate.
Oh, nice. Planetfall is really cool. So people are going to be.
Yes. Happy. People was super excited about that. That will blow people's minds. After that, there's a bunch of talks we've had about Parsecs things, Leaks things, at what point we start talking like new edition of the original game kind of thing. So, and what that would include. So there's a lot out there.
How long has it been now that 5 Parsec from Home 3rd Edition has been out?
A frightening amount of time. Let's see. Yeah. I suppose we can see when it showed up on Wargame Multiple. Solo Adventure Wargame. Oh, except they don't really show the year anymore, do they? 2021. So it has been...
That's what I wanted to say, yeah.
Yeah, 4 years?
Feels
longer. Yeah, that's still a good chunk. Which means... It's been
at least 2 40K editions, so...
Yeah. And it feels longer because it took... From the time I started working on it, that was like... I think almost 2 years before it came out. So Tactics took like forever. That was like handed off very shortly after 5 Parsecs was done. And then it took forever for that to get through the process. But it's one of those things, like, you know, they have like a lot of, if you go to the website, you look at all the RPG stuff. They have like so many projects that all have to go through, like, you know, I don't know how many people they employ for doing like editing and stuff. I prefer, like, they have one guy I usually work with because he kind of gets it.
Nice.
So it's like, you know, all these projects have to go through like this little funnel of like that dude. And then all the art has to be lined up, and they have to arrange, like, to print, you have to be within certain page ranges and stuff like that. And you have to have so much art, but not too much, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't have to do most of that stuff. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of what we had for the evening.
We covered all of this.
Paranoia, some gaming gossip, some WYSIWYG philosophizing.
Yeah, we came in at a hefty nearly hour and a half. So
yeah, that was a little longer than expected. My iPad's battery is a little better than the phone, so still in pretty good shape. Nice.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, then I think we should hard out.
Yeah. And
say goodnight to all these fine folks.
Peace, everybody. We'll do the anime outro.
Anime outro. Okay, take care, everyone. See you next time.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month, and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.